A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been wrestling with labeling and inventory for his hardware collection, and it got him thinking about the broader question of small-scale 3D printing at home. He wants to know what it actually takes to print custom keycaps, maybe niche USB cable housings, or small parts you'd normally order from AliExpress. He's also wondering about the environmental angle, whether you can print circuit boards at home, what the real cost looks like, and what software works on Linux. Basically, how far can a regular person push this without insane effort? And what does the entry ticket cost?
Oh, this is a great prompt, and it lands at exactly the right moment because the entry-level 3D printing landscape has shifted dramatically in the last 18 months. We're not in the tinkering with Ender 3's era anymore.
Before we dive in, quick note. Today's script is being generated by DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if the prose feels unusually crisp, that's why.
Alright, so let me start with the machine, because that's where Daniel's question begins, and honestly, it's where most people get stuck. The Bamboo Lab A1 Mini is the obvious entry point right now. It's $200, sometimes less on sale, and it arrives essentially pre-assembled. You take it out of the box, you run a 20-minute calibration sequence, and you're printing. The days of spending a weekend building a printer before you can even fail at your first print, those are over.
$200. That's actually less than some mechanical keyboards.
And the print quality is genuinely good. The A1 Mini can do layer heights down to about 0.08 millimeters, which for keycaps is totally adequate. You're not going to match injection molded double shot keycaps in terms of surface finish, but you can absolutely print a functional, good-looking keycap from your desk.
Okay, but let's press on the keycap question specifically, because that's where Daniel started. A keycap has to fit a switch stem precisely. It has to have a usable top surface, and ideally the legend, the letter or symbol, should be legible and not wear off. How much of that can you actually do?
All of it, with caveats. The stem tolerance is the trickiest part. A Cherry MX stem has a tolerance of about plus or minus 0.05 millimeters. Most consumer printers, including the A1 Mini, can hold about plus or minus 0.1 millimeters out of the box, so you're right at the edge of what's mechanically viable.
Some keycaps will be loose, some will be tight.
But the community has solved this. There are parametric keycap models on printables in Thingiverse where you can adjust the stem dimensions by a tenth of a millimeter at a time. You print a test stem, check the fit, tweak the model, and reprint. It takes maybe 3 or 4 iterations to dial it in for your specific printer and filament. After that, you've got a profile you can reuse forever.
Printing letters on top of a keycap.
The simpler one is a filament swap mid-print. Most modern printers support this. You pause at a specific layer, swap from black filament to white, and the printer lays down the legend as raised or recessed text in a different color. It's not double shot, but it's permanent because the color difference is the material itself, not a surface coating. The more advanced approach is a multi-material system. Bamboo Lab sells the AMS Lite for the A1 Mini, which is about $150 extra. That lets you print with up to 4 colors automatically.
Now we're at $350 all in for a setup that can print multicolored keycaps.
And that's the ceiling for a very capable beginner setup. The floor is $200 for the printer alone, plus about $20 for a spool of PLA filament that will print you dozens of keycaps.
Let me push on the USB cable question, because that's more interesting to me. Daniel mentioned printing a USB-C to micro-USB adapter or housing. What's actually printable there versus what you still have to buy?
This is where the distinction between structural parts and functional electronics becomes important. You can print the housing, the strain relief, the shell of a connector, all the mechanical parts. What you cannot print is the actual conductive bits. The pins, the contacts, the copper traces, those require metal. So for a USB cable, you'd print a custom shell or a cable management clip or a unique connector housing, but you're still buying the cable assembly with the actual conductors inside.
It's more about customization than replacement.
And that's actually where home 3D printing shines for electronics. Custom enclosures, mounting brackets, cable organizers, the little plastic clip that broke off your laptop charger, those are perfect use cases. You're not replacing the electronic supply chain, you're replacing the plastic parts supply chain, and the environmental math on that is interesting.
Yeah, Daniel mentioned that explicitly. He feels guilty every time a tiny plastic adapter shows up from Shenzhen in a box full of bubble wrap.
The shipping footprint for a 10-gram plastic adapter that travels 8,000 kilometers is absurd. But the counterargument is that a home printer is also using plastic and energy. So let me actually run the numbers. A typical spool of PLA filament is 1 kilogram and costs about $20. A small USB cable housing might use 3 grams of plastic, about 6 cents of material. The printer draws maybe 100 watts for the 15 minutes it takes to print that part, which at average US electricity prices is less than half a cent. So your total material and energy cost is under 7 cents.
Versus ordering a $1.50 adapter from AliExpress.
Right, but the AliExpress adapter was injection molded in a factory with much better energy efficiency per part than your desktop printer. The real environmental win isn't the manufacturing energy, it's the shipping. You're eliminating the trans-Pacific journey, the last mile delivery truck, the cardboard box, the bubble wrap. PLA itself is also industrially compostable, though most municipal facilities won't take it. It's made from cornstarch or sugarcane, not petroleum.
It's a net environmental win, but not for the obvious reason.
The manufacturing efficiency of a Chinese injection molding factory is hard to beat, but the logistics footprint of shipping individual small parts to consumers is terrible. Home printing eliminates the logistics. Whether that outweighs the less efficient manufacturing depends on the part, but for small, light items, it almost certainly does.
Let's talk about materials, because PLA isn't the only option, and Daniel might need something more durable.
PLA is the default for good reason. It prints easily at low temperatures, it doesn't warp, it doesn't need a heated enclosure, it doesn't off-gas anything toxic, but it's brittle and softens at around 60 degrees Celsius. Leave a PLA keycap in a hot car in summer and it'll deform. So for anything that needs durability, you've got options. PETG is the next step up. Tougher, more heat-resistant, and still prints without major difficulty. It's what most people use for functional parts. It's also food-safe in its raw form, though the printing process introduces tiny crevices that harbor bacteria, so don't print your own water bottles.
Then there's the exotic stuff.
TPU for flexible parts. Think phone cases or cable jackets. It's a bit stringy and harder to dial in, but totally doable on a printer like the A1 Mini. ABS is stronger and more heat-resistant than PETG, but it off-gasses styrene, which is not something you want in your living room, and it requires an enclosure to prevent warping. ASA is like ABS, but UV-resistant, good for outdoor parts. Nylon is incredibly strong, but absorbs moisture from the air and needs to be dried before printing. And then there are filled filaments, PLA with carbon fiber, with wood particles, with metal powder. Those are mostly aesthetic, but they wear down your nozzle faster.
The nozzle being the tiny hole the melted plastic comes out of.
Standard nozzles are brass and cost about $2. Carbon fiber filament will eat a brass nozzle in a single spool. You'd need a hardened steel nozzle, which is maybe $15 and takes 2 minutes to swap. Not a big deal, but worth knowing.
Let me recap the practical answer for Daniel. For $200, he can get a printer that will make functional keycaps, cable housings, small brackets, and replacement parts. For another $20 to $30 per kilogram of filament, he can experiment with different materials. The learning curve to get a decent print is maybe an afternoon. The learning curve to get a truly excellent print is weeks or months of tweaking settings.
That's fair. And I want to address the software question, because Daniel specifically mentioned Linux. The 3D printing software ecosystem is surprisingly Linux-friendly. The core workflow has 3 steps. Step 1, you need a 3D model. Step 2, you run that model through a slicer, which converts it into the specific instructions the printer understands. Step 3, you send that file to the printer.
Modeling, slicing, printing.
For modeling, there are several solid Linux native options. FreeCAD is the most capable. It's a full parametric CAD program, similar in concept to SolidWorks. It has a steep learning curve, but for someone like Daniel who works in tech and thinks systematically, it's very learnable. Blender is also available on Linux, and it's more artistic, better for organic shapes, but it's overkill for mechanical parts. OpenSCAD is the wildcard. It's a programming language for 3D models. You write code that describes your object, and it renders the result. For someone comfortable with scripting, it's incredibly powerful and version controllable.
I've seen OpenSCAD. It looks like someone designed a CAD program for people who hate mice.
That's not entirely wrong, but for parametric designs, like a keycap where you want to adjust the stem tolerance by a fraction of a millimeter, it's actually ideal. You change one variable and recompile. The slicing step is dominated by a few programs. PrusaSlicer and OrcaSlicer are both open source and run natively on Linux. Bamboo Studio is a fork of PrusaSlicer and also runs on Linux. All of them are mature, well-documented, and free.
Daniel isn't going to be fighting his operating system to make this work.
Not at all. The Linux experience is first class in 3D printing. If anything, it's better than Windows because you don't have driver issues with the USB connection to the printer.
Now let's get to the wildest part of Daniel's prompt. Can you print a PCB at home?
I was waiting for this. The short answer is no, not with a standard FDM printer. A printed circuit board requires conductive traces, usually copper, bonded to a non-conductive substrate, usually fiberglass. An FDM printer lays down melted plastic. Plastic is not conductive, so you cannot print a functional PCB on a $200 printer.
There's a longer answer.
There's always a longer answer. You can print a substrate with channels for wires, then manually insert conductive wire or conductive filament into those channels. There are conductive PLA filaments with carbon or metal particles, but their resistance is terrible. We're talking hundreds of ohms per centimeter, not usable for actual circuits. There are also specialized printers that can print conductive ink like the Volterra V1, but that's several thousand dollars and it's for prototyping, not production. And there's a whole emerging field of 3D printed electronics using extruded solder or conductive paste, but that's research lab territory.
If Daniel wants a custom PCB, he's still sending Gerber files to a fab house.
And honestly, that's fine. PCB fabrication is one of the few areas where outsourcing is efficient. You can get 5 custom PCBs delivered for under $10 from Chinese manufacturers with a turnaround of about a week. The environmental impact of shipping 5 small fiberglass boards is negligible compared to the waste you generate trying to do it at home. Some things are best left to specialized factories.
That's a useful boundary to draw. Let's talk about what's practical versus what's technically possible but miserable. Daniel asked what can be done without insane effort.
The threshold of insane effort is personal, but I'll draw some lines. Keycaps are practical. You can download a model, slice it, and have a usable keycap within an hour of unboxing the printer. It won't be perfect, but it'll work. Small brackets, enclosures, cable management clips. Those are trivial. Replacement knobs, battery covers, the little plastic foot that broke off your router. Those are the killer app for home 3D printing. You can measure the broken part, model a replacement in FreeCAD in 20 minutes, and print it in another 20.
What crosses the line into insane effort?
Anything requiring post-processing to be functional. If you have to sand, paint, epoxy coat, or heat, treat your print to make it usable, that's starting to get into hobby territory rather than practical tool territory. Multi-part assemblies that require precise fits between printed parts are also tricky because the tolerances stack up. Threaded parts are hit or miss. You can print threads, but they're never as strong as metal inserts, and tapping printed plastic is frustrating.
What about the noise and the fumes? Daniel lives in an apartment with Hannah and Ezra. Is he going to drive them crazy?
The A1 Mini is relatively quiet, about 48 decibels during printing, roughly conversation level. Quieter than an inkjet printer, actually, but it's not silent and it runs for hours. You wouldn't want it in a bedroom. As for fumes, PLA and PETG are essentially odorless and the emissions are considered safe for indoor use. ABS and ASA release styrene and should only be printed with ventilation. So for an apartment setup, stick with PLA and PETG and you're fine.
Let me circle back to cost, because Daniel asked about that specifically, and I want to give him a realistic picture. The printer is $200. What does the first month actually look like?
Printer, 200. A couple spools of filament, one PLA, one PETG, that's about $40. A set of basic tools, flush cutters, a deburring tool, maybe a small file set, another $20. Isopropyl alcohol for cleaning the build plate, a few dollars. The AMS light for multicolor is optional at $150. So the realistic entry point is around $260 for a single color setup that will do 90% of what Daniel described. The multicolor setup pushes it to about $410.
Then ongoing costs?
Filament is the main consumable. A 1 kilogram spool lasts a long time if you're printing small parts. A single keycap is about 2 grams. A USB cable housing is maybe 3 to 5 grams. You can print hundreds of small parts from one spool. The other consumables are rare. A nozzle every few months if you're printing a lot, a build plate surface maybe once a year, and electricity, which is negligible. The ongoing cost is almost entirely filament.
The per part cost is pennies, but the upfront investment is a few $100s. The economics only work if you print enough things.
That's the honest truth. If Daniel only wants 10 keycaps and 2 cable housings, he should just order them from a 3D printing service or buy them off the shelf. The printer makes sense if he's going to keep finding uses for it. And the thing about owning a 3D printer is that you do keep finding uses. Once you have the capability, you start seeing problems as printable. The broken clamp on your desk lamp, the missing knob on the stovetop, the custom spacer you need for a shelf bracket. Suddenly, those are all 20-minute fixes instead of hours of searching online and waiting for delivery.
There's a mindset shift. You stop being a consumer of plastic parts and start being a producer.
That's empowering. It's not just about saving money or time, though those are real. It's about not being dependent on a supply chain for trivial things. If a small plastic part breaks, you're not at the mercy of whether some factory in Shenzhen still makes it. You measure, you model, you print.
That resonates with the inventory labeling problem Daniel was originally wrestling with. He was trying to find the perfect pre-made solution, and eventually the answer was just a marker and some creativity. This is the same pattern. Sometimes the best solution is to make it yourself.
The barrier to making it yourself has never been lower. 3 years ago, recommending a 3D printer to someone who just wanted practical parts was borderline irresponsible. The machines required constant tinkering, the print quality was inconsistent, and the software was hostile. Now, a $200 printer produces reliable, high-quality prints with minimal intervention. The technology has crossed the threshold from hobbyist to appliance.
That's a strong claim. Is it really appliance level?
It's not quite a toaster. You still need to understand bed adhesion. You still need to keep your filament dry. You still occasionally get a failed print and have to figure out why. But it's closer to a paper printer than it is to a DIY electronics project. The first layer is the critical moment. If the first layer sticks properly, the rest of the print will almost certainly succeed. Modern printers have automatic bed leveling, which was the biggest pain point for beginners. The A1 Mini probes the bed before every print and compensates for any unevenness. You don't have to manually level anything.
The failure modes have been reduced to a manageable few.
The main things that go wrong are a dirty build plate, which you fix by wiping it with isopropyl alcohol, or wet filament, which you fix by drying it or keeping it in a sealed container with desiccant. Neither requires mechanical skill. They're just habits you develop.
Let's talk about the keycap design process specifically, because I think that's the most concrete thing Daniel mentioned. Walk me through what he'd actually do, step by step.
He wants a custom keycap with his own design. Step 1. He downloads a parametric keycap model. There are dozens of well-tested ones available for free. The most popular is probably the Key V2 parametric model on printables, which lets you adjust every dimension, stem size, wall thickness, top profile, everything. Step 2, he opens it in the slicer. If he wants a simple legend, he can use the slicer's built-in text tool to add raised or recessed letters. For a more complex design, he'd model it in FreeCAD or import an SVG into the slicer as a modifier. Step 3, he configures the filament swap. The slicer will insert a pause at the layer where the legend starts. When the printer pauses, he manually swaps the filament from the base color to the legend color. Step 4, he prints it. Total active time, maybe 30 minutes of setup for the first one, and 5 minutes for subsequent ones once the profile is dialed in.
The result is a functional keycap with a permanent legend.
Functional and permanent, yes. The surface texture won't feel like an injection molded keycap. It'll have visible layer lines, a slight rib texture. Some people like that, some don't. You can smooth PLA with careful sanding or with a coating of resin, but that adds effort. For a keycap that's going to be touched constantly, I'd probably recommend PETG over PLA. It feels slightly better and resists shine from finger oils.
What about the stem breaking? That's the failure mode I'd worry about.
FDM parts are anisotropic. They're weaker in the direction perpendicular to the layers. For a keycap stem, that means if the stem is printed vertically, the layers run along the stem and it's reasonably strong. If you print it horizontally, the layers run across the stem and it'll snap the first time you pull the keycap off. So orientation matters. Most keycap models are designed to be printed stem up for exactly this reason. A properly printed PETG keycap stem is strong enough for normal use. I've been using 3D printed keycaps on my daily driver for over a year without a single stem failure.
All right, that's reassuring. Let's shift to something Daniel mentioned in passing. The environmental impact of importing small parts. You ran the numbers on energy and materials. What about the bigger picture? If everyone started printing their own small plastic parts, would that actually be better?
It's complicated in the way these things always are. The centralized manufacturing model is incredibly efficient at producing identical parts. The injection molding machine in a Chinese factory can produce a keycap every 15 seconds, with almost zero material waste because sprues and rejects are reground and reused. The carbon footprint per part from manufacturing is tiny. But then you add the shipping, the packaging, the warehousing, the retail markup, and the fact that you're probably ordering 50 parts when you only need one because that's how they're sold.
The home printer is the inverse. Inefficient manufacturing, zero logistics.
There was a study from Michigan Tech in 2013 that looked at this for simple plastic parts. They found that home 3D printing had a lower total environmental impact than centralized manufacturing and shipping for parts under about 1 kilogram, primarily because of the eliminated transportation. The numbers have probably shifted since then, but the basic dynamic holds. For small, light parts where the shipping cost and packaging waste dominate the environmental equation, home printing wins.
There's also the waste reduction from not buying things you don't need. If Daniel needs one cable clip, he prints one cable clip. He doesn't buy a pack of 20 when 19 sit in a drawer forever.
That's the underappreciated environmental benefit. It's not just about the manufacturing method, it's about the match between supply and demand. Home printing is on-demand manufacturing. You produce exactly what you need when you need it. No overproduction, no inventory, no eventual landfill of unsold stock. That's significant.
Let me ask about a different material angle. Daniel mentioned markers and paint pens for labeling, which got him thinking about printing. Can you print labels directly onto objects? Like, could you print a small part with raised text that serves as a label?
And it's one of the things home printers do really well. You can design a small tag or plate with raised text, print it in a contrasting color, and attach it. Or you can embed the text directly into the part you're printing. For his inventory system, he could print small clip-on labels with raised numbers, or snap-on rings with embossed identifiers. Because the text is part of the geometry, it never fades or rubs off. It's more durable than any sticker or marker.
That's actually a really elegant solution to his original problem. Instead of finding the perfect marker that won't smudge on every surface, print the label as a physical object.
He can design them to fit his exact storage system. If he's using a specific size of bin or a specific shelf rail, the labels can clip on perfectly. That's the kind of integration that's impossible with generic labels and trivial with a 3D printer.
I want to go back to the PCB question for a moment, because I think there's an interesting middle ground we haven't covered. You said you can't print a functional circuit board. But what about printing a board holder, or a jig, or something that assists in manual PCB assembly?
Oh, that's absolutely doable, and it's a common use case. You can print solder paste stencil frames, board holders for rework, enclosures with integrated standoffs, and mounting points for specific board layouts. If Daniel ever gets into DIY electronics, the printer becomes a tool for making tools. Custom jigs for holding components during soldering, test fixtures, programming adapters, all printable. It's one of those adjacent capabilities that makes the printer more valuable the more you use it.
Even if the electronics themselves come from a fab house, the printer handles everything around them.
And that's honestly the sweet spot for home 3D printing. It's not replacing electronics manufacturing, it's augmenting it. The printer handles the mechanical world, the fab house handles the electrical world, and you get the best of both.
Let's talk about the Linux software workflow in more detail, since Daniel specifically asked. He's on Linux. He wants to design a part and print it. What does that actually look like, end to end?
I'll walk through a concrete example. Let's say he wants to design a custom cable clip. He opens FreeCAD. He creates a new sketch on the XY plane. He draws the profile of the clip, maybe a C-shape with specific dimensions for the cable diameter. He constrains the sketch with exact measurements. He closes the sketch and extrudes it to the width he wants. He adds fillets to the edges so it's not sharp. He exports the model as an STL file. That's the modeling done, and it's all native Linux, no compatibility layers, no Wine, no virtual machines.
Then the slicer.
He opens OrcaSlicer or PrusaSlicer, both of which have native Linux builds. He imports the STL. He selects his printer profile. The A1 mini profile is built into both slicers now. He chooses his filament type, adjusts a few settings if he wants. Layer height, infill percentage, whether to add supports. He clicks slice, and within seconds he has a preview of every layer the printer will lay down. He can scrub through the layers to check for problems. Then he saves the file to a micro SD card or sends it directly over Wi-Fi, depending on the printer.
The printer just runs it.
The printer heats up, does its automatic bed leveling routine, and starts printing. For a small cable clip, total print time is maybe 15 or 20 minutes. The whole workflow, from opening FreeCAD to holding the finished part, can be under an hour, and none of it requires leaving Linux or using proprietary software.
That's impressive. 5 years ago, the Linux CAD story was basically learn OpenSCAD or suffer.
It was bad. FreeCAD was unstable. The slicers were Windows only, and printer firmware was a nightmare. The ecosystem has matured enormously. Part of that is the rise of Prusa's commitment to open source. Part of it is the broader Linux desktop becoming more viable. But the 3D printing community has always had a strong open source ethos, and Linux users benefit from that disproportionately.
What's the one thing that still trips people up? The thing that isn't obvious from reading guides or watching videos?
It's the number one cause of failed prints for beginners, and it's not always intuitive. The build plate needs to be clean, not looks clean. Finger oils are enough to prevent adhesion. A quick wipe with isopropyl alcohol before every print solves 90% of problems. The other 10% are usually the first layer being too high or too low, which automatic bed leveling mostly handles, but you still need the Z offset calibrated correctly. Once you get a feel for what a good first layer looks like, slightly squished, not round, and not transparently thin, you'll rarely have adhesion issues.
For keycaps specifically, anything unique?
The small contact area of the stem to the build plate can be a challenge. A brim, a thin skirt of material around the base of the print, helps. Some models include a built-in brim that you snap off after printing. Also, printing the keycap upside down, with the top face on the build plate, gives you a perfectly smooth top surface, but the stem then prints in midair and needs supports. It's a trade-off between top surface quality and stem accuracy. Most people print stem up and accept the slight texture on the top face.
Daniel also asked about cost being the main constraint. I want to put a finer point on that. If someone has $100 total, can they do any of this?
$100 is tight, but not impossible. The used market is an option. Older printers like the Ender 3 go for well under $100, but they require significantly more tinkering. I wouldn't recommend that path for someone who just wants to print parts. If $100 is the hard ceiling, I'd honestly suggest waiting and saving another $100. The jump from a $100 used printer to a $200 new printer is enormous in terms of reliability and ease of use. The frustration you avoid is worth far more than $100.
That's a rare position for a tech recommendation. Just wait.
It's honest. The A1 Mini at $200 is the inflection point where the technology becomes accessible to non-hobbyists. Below that, you're still in tinkerer territory. Some people enjoy the tinkering, and more power to them. But Daniel's prompt was specifically about what can be done without insane effort, and the answer is, spend $200 on the right printer or don't bother.
What about the $300 to $500 range? Is there a meaningful step up?
The next step up from the A1 Mini is the full-size Bamboo Lab A1 at around $350, which gives you a larger build volume. 256 mm cubed versus the Mini's 180. For keycaps and small parts, the Mini's volume is plenty. You only need the larger bed if you're printing bigger things, like full keyboard cases or larger enclosures. Above that, you get into enclosed printers like the Bamboo P1P at $600, which can handle ABS and ASA safely and print faster. But for Daniel's stated use case, the Mini is the sweet spot.
The multi-material add-on is worth it if you want Legends on keycaps.
If Legends are a priority, yes. Manual filament swaps work, but they're tedious if you're doing more than a few keycaps. The AMS light automates it and opens up possibilities like dissolvable support interfaces, which make complex geometries much easier. But it's a luxury, not a necessity. Start with the printer. Add the AMS later if you find yourself wanting multicolor.
I think we've covered the practical answers pretty thoroughly. Let me ask a more speculative question. Where is this going? Daniel's asking about what's possible now, but what's coming in the next few years that might change the equation?
A few things. Conductive filament is improving. We're not at PCB replacement levels yet, but the resistivity is dropping. There are research groups working on multi-material printers that can combine conductive and insulating materials in a single print, which could eventually produce simple circuits. But that's probably 5 to 10 years from consumer availability. More near term, the software is getting smarter. Generative design tools that optimize parts for 3D printing are becoming accessible. AI-assisted modeling, where you describe what you want and the software generates a printable model, that's already emerging. And printer speeds keep increasing. The A1 Mini can do a benchy in about 15 minutes. A few years ago, that was an hour.
A benchy being the little boat everyone prints as a test.
The universal benchmark. If you own a 3D printer, you've printed at least one benchy. It's practically a rite of passage.
Faster printers, smarter software, better materials. But the fundamental limitation. You're laying down plastic layer by layer. That's not changing.
Not for FDM printers, no. There are other technologies like resin printing that produce much finer detail and smoother surfaces, but they're messier. The resin is toxic before curing, and the post-processing is more involved. For functional parts like what Daniel wants, FDM is the right choice. Resin is for miniatures and jewelry.
I want to circle back to something Daniel mentioned that we haven't fully addressed. He talked about ordering niche cables and adapters from AliExpress and feeling guilty about the environmental impact. Is 3D printing really a replacement for that, or is it more of a supplement?
It's a supplement for the plastic parts, not a replacement for the electronics. For a USB cable, you still need the copper, the connectors, the shielding. What you can replace is the housing, the strain relief, the cable management. But the core electrical components still come from a factory. The environmental win is partial, not total. Where 3D printing really replaces AliExpress orders is for purely mechanical parts. Brackets, clips, stands, cases, mounts, knobs. The things that are just shaped plastic with no electronics inside. Those are the low-hanging fruit.
The keycaps Daniel mentioned are exactly that.
A keycap is just a precisely shaped piece of plastic. There's no reason it needs to come from a factory on the other side of the world. Printing it at home eliminates the entire supply chain for that part. The same goes for the labels and inventory tags he was originally wrestling with. Those are perfect candidates for local manufacturing.
The answer to Daniel's prompt, distilled, yes, he can print custom keycaps at home with a $200 printer, PLA or PETG filament, and free Linux software. He can print cable housings and small mechanical parts. He cannot print functional PCBs, but he can print everything around them. The environmental impact is generally positive for small parts by eliminating shipping. And the whole setup requires an afternoon of learning, not a career change.
That's a good summary. I'd add that the hidden value is the capability itself. Once you have the printer, you start solving problems you didn't know were solvable. The broken thing doesn't stay broken. The missing piece doesn't stay missing. That's the real shift.
The cost is $260 for a starter setup that will print for years with minimal ongoing expense.
Plus the occasional spool of filament and a bottle of isopropyl alcohol. It's one of the cheapest productive hobbies you can have.
All right, I think we've earned our fun fact. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The average cumulus cloud weighs approximately 1.1 million pounds.
I'm going to be looking at clouds differently now.
A million pounds, just floating there.
This has been My Weird Prompts with production by Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed the episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll catch you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.